Hello and welcome to episode 22 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we'll be talking about collectible card games. That mostly means Pokemon and Magic the Gathering, but we will touch on some others as well. But first, let's go off topic with some news, announcements, and feedback.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. If you're new, welcome to the podcast. If you're not new, thanks for coming back. We talk about games, so we're keep doing that. But first, we're going to talk about My Wasteline, because that's the most important thing. We put that at the top of the show. Maybe I'll put that at the bottom of off topic. We'll see. this week, my weight loss update, I'm at 205.6, down 6.2 pounds this week, which is an excessive amount. Hopefully that slows down to a normal.
I was going to say, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Like, good on you.
It would be, except for it's really, really fast.
Right.
But again, the first couple of weeks doesn't count too much.
You fluctuate a lot. Yeah.
So I'm down 9.4 since the first. So we'll see. That should average out to about 2.5 to 3 pounds a week on, at the most as a healthy weight loss. But again, that's over the average.
So you're worried a little bit that it's too fast, like it's kind of unhealthily fast, or that it's not accurate, or what?
It's a non-sustainable fast.
Yes.
Right, so right. If you lose weight that fast, you'll likely gain it back.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
it might sense. Be... like water weight or yeah. Like those weird like
or your body like, oh no, I'm going into starvation mode, and then suddenly it starts to just store everything.
Okay.
Yeah, so you want a nice healthy weight loss. 2.5 to 3 pounds a week is okay. Like considered high healthy average.
Okay,
so aiming for that. We'll see how that happens over
nice.
The next week.
Well, yeah, mine is actually, because you know, I did my first one last week as well, and 182.3 now, so I'm down one overall. So
nice.
Yeah, not too bad.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice. Kitty's already looking good, so she's fine.
Yeah.
So, our Valentine's Day contest. We have a few entries. I will be honest with you. Your odds are really, really good if you enter this contest, because we're only talking about it on the podcast. We're not doing any social media push of it, because I only want people who listen to us and say, hey, I want to enter that contest. So, how do you enter? You essentially send us an email saying Valentine's Day contest. Tell us about your favorite games that we haven't talked about, or maybe your favorite couples game, and then you're entered in the contest.
What's the email address again?
TabletopGameTalk@gmail.com.
Nice.
You're guaranteed to win a couples games. That's at least two-player games, probably a bunch more. I actually spend a long time entering all my games into Board Game Geek, and I immediately got a badge for having over 100 games. The next badge is at 250, so I have to finish entering some of my small box games so I can get there. I think I'm like 15 short or something like that. So that is there. And then, let's see. Oh, bonus entries. Something came up. If you have ever done an iTunes review, that will carry through to every single one of our contests. So just remind me that you did it when you enter the contest, and you'll get 5 entries. So
nice.
You don't have to wait for a good contest to do a review. Just remind me that you you did it. Otherwise, you get a bonus entry for every share and like. No, for every like. And for every share and retweet, you get 3 bonus entries. Deadline is February 5th at 6 p.m. And that's it on the contest. So I don't have any other news and announcements to speak of. No? Actually, I guess we do have one. We're going to vary the off-topic section a little bit, because normally off-topic is me talking for, I don't know, 25 minutes straight as Josh and Kitty smile and nod.
Great radio for
yes,
us.
Yes, it's the best. So we're splitting up the topics a little bit. Each of us is going to take a different segment and kind of lead that off. One of the things that I have noticed, because I do listen to our podcast, unlike some other people at the table.
Hey, I listen sometimes. Not all the time. Just sometimes.
I usually pick a filler word. Last week was a lot of ums. All about the ums. The week before that was lots of yeps. And yep. That was just another jeez.
You're just going to yourself.
Just chill out, dude. It's fine.
That's why I don't listen.
Yeah. So
then I get self-conscious and worried.
Yeah.
No,
so I'm
going
to try to
it.
Pick a word that doesn't sound filler. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe
like quite or something.
So
that's
or
a good
quite.
One.
Quite's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quite good. So that is my feedback to myself. Yeah. See what I turned that into. Nice. So, Josh, why don't you take us to feedbacks?
So we got iTunes review. Let's see. No iTunes reviews this week, unfortunately. That's probably because we didn't give out the shortcut to the reviews last week. So that is tabletopgametalk.com/review. Then click open in iTunes. Then search for Tabletop Game Talk. And then click on the review tab. And then you can write a review. That's easy. Yeah, easy peasy.
That seems easy.
Yeah, let me squeeze
it. I don't know why people aren't leaving more reviews. It seems absurd.
It's only like 5 steps.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm honestly not sure if you can even do it if you don't have iTunes installed.
Yeah, it tried to ask me to install iTunes because I have an Android phone.
Yeah.
And I was looking to do it. And yeah, I was like, oh, this is too much work.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe Google Play. I don't know if Google Play has their own review system yet, but
I will look into that.
Yeah, let's see. One of us should track the Google Play reviews.
Yeah,
I feel like we should put Josh in charge of it.
We should. I have an Android phone. Yeah. I'll look into it.
Yep. So next part, Kitty.
All right, we got an email from Joran Sacchetti.
Yep.
All right, and he says, "I added you all on Twitter and continue to enjoy listening to your show. Keep up the great work."
Thank you.
Oh, awesome.
Jordan. Oh, Joran.
Yes.
No G. Sorry. So, off topic, I just wanted to recommend you guys check out the Kickstarter game, This War of Mine, based off the very popular and somewhat dreary Steam game. From listening to your top 5 lists, I strongly believe you guys would enjoy it.
Yeah, so I looked this up. The Kickstarter actually closed in May of 31st of 2016. So, I'll have to see if I can find it once it's released. Its tagline is a board game experience carrying an important message. In war, not everyone is a soldier. Can you survive to see the end of the war? So, yeah.
So, like, civilians?
It is intriguing.
I don't know.
It's mysterious.
So, we'll have to check it out.
See, picture myself hiding in an attic in this board game and, like, roll the dice really quietly.
I'm interested to know what it was about our top fives that led him to believe that we strongly enjoy it. Like, I'm like, this is mysterious as well.
I know.
Like, what is it about this game?
Yeah, I'm going to track it down. We're gonna find it.
Mm.
And then back to Joran. On topic, I'd like to put forward Millborn as as a couples game. It plays 2, but can play 4 as 2 versus 2. So either way, it works.
Yeah, this is one of Spencer's top fives, right?
It was one of his top fives. Mm. I still haven't played it with him. But now that I know it's a good couple game.
Does he have the actual game?
Yeah.
All right.
We've got like a old copy that I think came out of his friend's mom's basement.
Well, I forget which one this was because
it's a racing game.
Oh, the racing game one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, now I'm with you.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cool.
So, yeah, and another thing. So, Joran, I know you sent me your handle. I think it's Chochai23, if we couldn't pronounce your last name, but we'll just call you Joran. We're on a first name basis. It's good.
So, I've got another email here from Jose Luis, who says, I was very excited to hear you guys reading my last email. Thanks for that.
Of course. Send us an email, we're going to read it. Caveat, this one we're going to cut out a few things because it was long, but we'll summarize those.
So it continues. And also, last podcast, I understood a bit more about different English accents.
Thanks, Spencer.
Yeah, I was just messing with you. I really understand you all. The occasional Brit accent just spices things up once in a while, since I'm usually hearing in American English mode. Either way, thanks for clearing that up. Nice.
Yeah, I love the idea that you're speaking a native Spanish speaker's email in a British accent.
It's pretty good,
or
isn't
even
it?
Reading. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, we're both European. It's fine.
Yeah,
probably from South America. I imagine.
I believe he says
later
from Mexico.
Yeah,
Mexico. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is still North America.
Oh yeah, that's true. So we're in the same continent. Good stuff. I liked your top 5 list, but it was a bit weird to hear about many classic American games in your lists. I mean, I like some of them, but once I was introduced to Catan 12 or 13 years ago, I couldn't look back. I'll try to list my top 5 board games of all time, but it would be hard to rank them 1 to 5. So is it Catan like a European game or?
Catan was the original gateway game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he's saying like, you know, it was weird to hear so many American games, but I like Catan as if to say it's a European game.
I think he's saying that once you go towards the more like designer board games, mm-hmm. the higher quality, he's surprised that we still like to go back to
like Milton Bradley classics and things like that. Like, why go to Monopoly once you've played Catan and moved forward?
Or even, like, Risk. Uh-huh.
Or Risk, yeah.
Risk is... Right. And I think it... I think some of it's because of the nostalgia. I think we brought that up several times. Yep. So, true. You know, it's... Yeah.
We'll do that. That's true. And a lot of these games have been iterated on, so they're actually more designer now than they were when they first came out. Mm-hmm. But, well, we had... Like Labyrinth, I think it just updated the art, but it's still a fun game.
Yeah, well, that one, I'm not sure that that's an American classic even. I think that's just like a...
Yeah, I want to say it's German, because the on the side of the board. German. Yeah, it's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. So,
it was a weird LeBaron family thing.
So, okay, so Jose's list, in no particular order, the following games: Seven Wonders, Dominion, Patchwork, which you mentioned last week, Chris.
Yep.
Food Chain Magnate, which I've never even heard of. Codenames is the last one there. Wow.
Yep. So, and I think it's Jose Luis had descriptions for all of these. We have talked about all of them, so we're going to skip over those real quick, except for Food Chain Magnate. It's...
Because that was Jose Luis's favorite one.
Yeah, let's read his description of it, because I think that'll do it more justice.
Sure. So, my heavyweight champion here, Food Chain Magnate. FCM manages to combine a deep strategic game, a cool theme, and unique mechanics in a single box. The randomized board and the many successful strategies you can pull out to make FCM a well-rounded game with a lot of replayability. With this game, it was love at first sight.
Yeah, so Food Chain Magnate, and there's, I think it's called just called The Networks, are two games that I've heard a lot about that I really want to play, and I just haven't got to playing them yet. So now that I've said that, they're likely going to show up in the next week or so.
So it continues. I left out some other games like Splendor. How do you say that one? Jaipur?
I think so, yeah. I have not heard of that one.
Roll for the Galaxy and Terra Mystica, because five games is just too few.
I agree. Yeah, Roll for the Galaxies, I really like that. I like that a little bit better than Race for the Galaxy. It's an easier entry point.
Right.
It's far more solo, though. Like, you're each playing your own game. I don't know if Race for the Galaxy is like that or not, but...
Yeah.
But, is that the one? I think we played Roll for the Galaxy.
Yeah, basically you're rolling dice behind a screen, and y'all reveal, and you're doing the little symbols and stuff. It's a more approachable than Race for the Galaxy. Mm. I've owned Race for the Galaxy for like 4 years now, and I still haven't got to the point where I can play it.
Wow.
So it's a tricky one. It's a hard one to get into.
Okay. So it continues. I'm just going to mention that my girlfriend and I have a board gaming blog in Spanish called La Matatena. Hopefully I didn't butcher
that. Let's spell that.
It's, because it's LA-MATATENA.com. And we're organizing monthly gaming nights in Guadalajara, Mexico. And we've convinced some cafes and restaurants to host these gaming nights. We're trying to build a community, so we're having new and experienced gamers in this gaming nights. And we will show modern board games to the newbies and teach them how to play. And we hope they'll have a great time. The first one's on January 25th, and we're really excited, and they're bringing their whole collection.
That's awesome. All I say is you're probably going to spend more time teaching than playing. Mm-hmm. That's usually what happens when you're the organizer, but good luck. And this is great. The more board game events we have around anywhere, the better. Mm-hmm. And this is a really good way to do this, because you can't necessarily just spring up a board game cafe, but if you do like pop-up game nights in already existing places, you kind of get, it's a win-win. You know, it's kind of what we do around here. We have meetups and stuff where it's like, let's all go to the bar and play whatever.
And I wonder if they have meetup.com in Mexico. If they do, they should totally use that as a way to get more people in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd say download that app if you have it in Mexico and use that to draw people in, meetup.
Yep.
He says, I hope to write about you guys in La Matatena soon. I know you may not understand half of what we write there, but we may be releasing some videos in English and German soon. And we're very excited because we are interviewing Yu Rosenberg next month, designer of Patchwork, Agricola, Le Havre, Caverna.
Yep, and many others. And
many others. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, so I guarantee we will not understand even half of what you say if it's in Spanish. But if you do an English version, we're definitely going to watch it.
Yeah, we're not too good on the whole bilingual thing.
I can do French.
Yeah, I know basic Thai because I live there for a bit.
Yeah.
So he says, if you want me to ask you, Rosenberg, anything, let him know.
Yeah, see if he wants to do an interview with us.
Ask him. Send us his way. Either way, this has been a little bit too long. Thank you guys once again for reading my email, and hope you have a great time. Keep up the good work.
Well, thank you for writing and keep responding to our stuff. This is a community podcast. We need the community to feedback. Yeah.
Other people, chime in. We'll read you out.
Yep. Speaking of, Kitty.
Kitty.
So I'm looking at this.
Oh, it's from Nate.
I was going to say, you didn't put in a name, Chris. Nate, I'm so sorry. Chris messed up the show notes. This wasn't my fault. All right. Hello, Chris, Josh, and Kitty. Thank you for answering some of my questions. I loved hearing your group origin story. Thank you to Kitty for going back to the beginning. You're welcome.
Yep. Otherwise, I would have started like 5-10
halfway
minutes ago.
Halfway through. I also enjoyed hearing each of your top 5 games as well. Honored that you made one of my topics the first podcast of the year. I did forget to send you my top 5, which includes the games from some of your lists. And here they are. Race for the Galaxy, Above and Below, Settlers of Catan, Avalon or Resistance, but he likes the King Arthur theme better, and Machikoro.
So I say again, Race for the Galaxy, I definitely need to get to the table at some point, but we've talked about all the others and we agree, like we all love all those games.
And he goes on, anyways, the two-player game I think is the best is Race for the Galaxy. I'm biased as that's my favorite game. Even though the game plays up to 4, I always play it with 2 players whenever I get to play. That is quick game with deep strategy. But if you meant games that are strictly 2 players, I think another good one is Patchwork. Played a few times at a friend's place. It's easy to teach, but it's a fun puzzle with good strategy as well. Who knew that a game about sewing could be so much fun? By the way, how is your battle going against the world's diseases?
And we're still in July, right? Are we just finished
July? We haven't
started July.
Since the last time we talked about it.
Yeah, we're working on it. So the trick isn't us three. Mm. We're actually pretty easy to get in the same room at the same time.
Sure.
It's also getting Spencer in the same room with us.
He's so elusive, that Spencer.
He is very inconsiderate.
Well, we record on Sunday evenings and football.
Football. Do you guys have tomorrow off?
No.
Oh. No?
I don't think so. What day is it tomorrow?
It's Martin Luther King Day.
Oh,
yeah. Right, goodness. I have tomorrow off, so I was going to be like, oh, we could do it all day
event. Maybe I do.
I mean, I get out early. Maybe I'll come down.
Yeah. Does Spencer have it off?
I don't think so.
Oh. Well, if we want to play tomorrow night, we can certainly try putting that in there.
All right. And Nate says, keep up the great work.
We'll try.
Thanks, Nate. All right. Now for our new segment, Quick Question. For our first quick question, we're turning to Henry5454's topic suggestion. And we are going to go over some of the games we're looking forward to in 2017.
Yeah. So we were talking about doing a full episode on this. But I think the problem with like anticipated games, you never really know. So we put together a list of games that we know we're looking forward to. Some of these are from Kickstarter. Some of these are from Board Game Geek.
Got there in the end.
Eventually. It's so hard to not say and yup. So
you need to start saying
you're
quite.
Thinking too much. Yeah.
So I'll mention a few here. Gloomhaven. Gloomhaven is a really big box of cards. It's kind of a role-playing game out of cards that you can play cooperatively with a group of people.
I think we mentioned this in a Kickstarter segment earlier, yeah?
Yep. Not related in any way to the other game called Gloom, no?
No, right, not in any way. No, nope, not Keith Baker's Gloom. This should actually be shipping pretty soon. I expect to see this in the next month or two. As they're asking for final addresses. So next one, Kitty, I know you're looking forward to this one as she takes a drink of hot chocolate.
Pandemic Legacy Season 2. Mm-hmm. We're really excited about it. It is really a motivator to get us through Season 1 because we still haven't done that.
Well, hopefully we will. This isn't supposed to be out until Gen Con, which is in August. So we should make that. Thunderstone Quest. It's Thunderstone Advanced Quest. I know nothing about this. It was actually Eric Summer from the Dice Tower where I first heard this and I started doing some looking up. It seems like it's a reboot of Thunderstone Advanced, which is a deck building game with a fantasy setting to it, but cooperative, so you can go through different scenarios and stuff with it, and then you can replay it once you've gone through the scenarios. So Thunderstone Advanced is a really, really cool deck building game that is more in lines with Dominion than any other deck building game I've seen, but with a lot more flavor and theme. So I'm really looking forward to this. I just don't have any information on it. Let's see, the next one, Tiny Epic Quest. I really like the Tiny Epic series of games.
Which Tiny Epic? We did.
We did Tiny Epic Galaxies. We've played that.
That's what I thought was Roll for the Galaxy.
That is not Roll for the Galaxy.
not played Roll for the Galaxy. All
right. You did make me play Roll for the Galaxy.
I did make you play Roll for the Galaxy, yes.
It was okay.
It was all right.
It's not my favorite.
I like it, but there's not a lot of player interaction in it.
No.
Yeah, you're building up your own engine and trying to get your points before anyone else, but you can't really affect anyone else all that much.
My problem with it, as I recall, was that I had a hard time figuring out how to play before Chris won.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is for games like that where you build your own personal engine, if somebody knows what they're doing, they can kind of build that engine much faster. So it's tricky to bring other people in. Mm-hmm. Let's see, Adventura is another adventure card game. This is by, I don't remember who it's by. I don't think it's Mike Seliger, who does the Pathfinder adventure card game. But this one's another box of cards, really. It's kind of like the Pathfinder adventure card game, but in card form. And I've still been addicted to Pathfinder on the iPad. So we'll see once I have like these brand new cards where I have to actually shuffle them if I still like it. I want to mention Illimat. This is a Keith Baker's new game. Keith Baker is the one who does Gloom. This is like your classic, it looks classic, like classic board, classic card type of thing.
What's the theme?
I don't know. It's kind of
I think we talked about this before in one of our earlier episode Kickstarter things, but I don't remember.
Yeah, it has seasons and such.
Okay.
You can still order it if you go to, well, just search for Illimat, Illimatt, and you'll find the game. Cool. I think it's like two something studios. The next one's for Kitty.
I was so excited when I read this in the show notes. I like legit squealed. Near and Far, the next game in the Above and Below line.
Yep.
So now we have to play more Above and Below because I feel like we haven't read enough of the story to justify doing another one.
We would have played some today. I was actually going to recommend it. I didn't tell Kitty. She's looking at me like, but then we did what instead? We'll find out in a minute. a couple more. Card Rogue. This is a really cool Kickstarter video. It's a rogue-based game. If you're not familiar with the classic rogue game, it's like go until you die. So this is the card game version of it, which looks pretty good. Mistborn House Wars.
Oh my god, I just saw this. This is based on the Mistborn series of books, which I'm a massive fan of.
From Brandon Sanderson.
That's why it's familiar. You've been trying to get me to read those books.
Yep, and they're so good.
Oh, they're really good.
Yeah. So what I'm going to attempt to do, and this is not going to happen, so this really isn't a spoiler or anything. I'm telling you right off the bat, it's not going to happen. But when this gets out, I'm going to see if I can't get like a quick interview with Brandon Sanderson about this, because there's also a Mistborn role-playing game that he had a huge part in creating.
Oh really?
So that's which cool. I also have, but but I would love to talk to him about the games that are based on the books. And if you haven't read Brandon Sanderson's Mistborn series or Stormlight Archive series, do so. They're huge. I recommend them on Audible. They're about the best buy you can get for one credit. It's like 45 hours of book. They're amazing. So
you've read the Stormlight as well?
Yeah.
Oh man, we need to have some conversations.
Quote unquote read. I listened to the entire thing.
You've
You consumed the media.
I consumed the media.
The story. Oh my goodness. I didn't know you'd read that one as well. Okay.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Massive Darkness. We talked about this one. This is a miniature game based on, I believe it's based on the zombie side. Engine, but it's like dungeon version as opposed to zombie version, and I like dungeons better than zombies. The last one's for Josh.
Oh, Arcadia Quest Inferno. Yep. So it's like an expansion, I take it?
It's a standalone expansion, so you can mix it in with Arcadia Quest, or you can play it by itself.
I do like a bit of Arcadia Quest, gotta say.
So that is our quick question segment. So each week we're going to grab, Kitty's going to choose a question. So send us your questions. They'll go into our question bucket and she will decide which one we answer. New games and Kickstarters. So I got a lot of games. The Stratego Battle Cards, I believe Andrew recommended this as a two-player game. We played this. I like it with one minor house rule. So have you guys played Stratego? Like the pieces with the bombs and the flags and the
No, I haven't played the board game. I only played the card one with you.
All right. So this game is based on Stratego, the classic 80s, maybe even 70s, like goes way back, but with cards. And with there's a one rule in there where if you play the flag and they don't kill it, you can reset the entire your entire side of the hand, and it just seems like you could go forever. So we quickly house ruled that to once per side just to shorten the game. But otherwise, the game is actually really good. And even without that rule, I would have fun playing that.
Easy game. To pick up, and like great gateway game. Anyone you could teach anyone to play that very quickly.
Yep. The other one I got was Phoenix Dawn Command. This is Keith Baker's new role playing game. It's a board game hybrid. It's more of a role-playing game than a board game, but it's played with cards and chips and pieces. So you still have like a game master who's setting out the story, but the characters are cards, and you're playing cards, or they have a deck of cards you're drawing from, and what you can do is based on that.
See, I think I'd enjoy that more than the whole normal D&D creation. Yeah. That seems like more my kind of...
So, yeah, I've been reading the book. It's really kind of a cool setting. So the idea behind it very quickly is you were a phoenix. And so the first time you lived your life, you're just a normal person. But then you die and you come back as a phoenix. And you're like, oh, wow, this is cool. Now I have superpowers. And you can come back 7 times. And each time you come back, you get stronger. Mm-hmm. But on your 7th death, you're done.
Right, like a
so
cat.
You need to make, yes.
Oh, no, 9 lives.
Well, okay. Yeah, like right. Just not quite as good as a cat. Right. You're just a flaming bird.
Right.
Except I don't think cats get more powerful.
No, they really don't. They get less and less powerful. But so it's a really cool idea. It's like it's a role-playing game where death is not a bad. It's basically how you level up. Right. So you're looking for like heroic ways of going out with a blaze of glory, like sometimes literally. And then the world is like this. Was at peace for quite some time, for 100 years, and the phoenix kind of faded away. They became legends or whatever, kind of a myth thing. And now the dread is upon the world, and so the phoenixes are starting to come back.
Oh,
so
kind of like on Sunday evening when you know you've got Monday coming up.
That's
soon.
That basically kind of it. Yeah, unless you have tomorrow off, like some of us here.
Stop rubbing it in.
I also got a couple of quick small box games. Rock, Paper, Wizard, which is not paper, rock, scissors, but Rock, Paper, Wizard. This one's fun. This is a you have spell cards on the table, and you're trying to get the most treasure. You're trying to be the first wizard to get to 25 gold, and you do that by picking a spell on the table, and you go rock, paper, wizard, and you make a symbol. The spell cards each have a symbol that you make with your hand, and then you point at someone. So you're casting spells at each other, and then you trigger those spells, see what they do, and then you either collect gold or you push further out to the entrance, and it's just like this wizard battle with, just quick wizard battle. I also got Burke's Gambit, which is you are on a spaceship, and there's blue team, red team, but one person has a parasite, and they could be on either team.
Right.
Now, the blue team's mission is to try to get the parasite person out of the airlock.
I heard about this, actually.
Yep.
I did an escape room this week, and one of my fellow escapees was telling that he was playtesting this.
Yep. It looks really cool, and it plays 3-6, which is relatively small for social deduction, but there's a lot of mechanics in this one. So the parasite can switch. There is elimination, but the games are relatively short. So we'll have to get this one and try this one out.
Hang on. Is it like a social deduction type thing?
Mm-hmm. It is. But because there's so much mechanics to it, you can almost use the mechanics to figure it out.
Because it almost sounds like that game, Two Rooms and a Boom.
Sort of. Sounds like there's that. Actually literally, there's dice rolling, and the dice have different powers. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you can be like, look at the person's parasite card to your left, or look at the person's to the right, or look at anyone's.
Right.
You can never look at your own.
Okay.
So there's a lot of mechanics that help you figure that out, where you don't have to go with the, Kitty, are you infected?
Uh-huh.
So, also the infected never knows, because you're never allowed to look at your own parasite cards. You never know if you're the one that's infected or not.
Yeah. Almost a Battlestar like Galactica, a double blind,
yeah.
Secret Cylon.
Yep.
I just heard the beginning bit of there's a blue team and a red team, and there's a parasite somewhere, and it just sounded like the election this year. That's what it's
about. Yeah. And on that note, Blood Bowl. So Andrew emailed me about this one. He gave me a link to Steam. Unfortunately, I'm a PC or Mac guy, and this is a game for PC for the electronic version, but I found a copy on Amazon, as I tend to do. So I now own the basic copy of Blood Bowl, which is, as we were saying, is Warhammer, basically Warhammer playing football.
Yeah.
It looks really cool. Nice. So I'm going to put this together, and we'll have to play a game or two or three or a season and see where it goes.
For sure.
And then
I'm intrigued about this.
Blood Bowl or the next one?
The next one.
So I did kickstart one game. I just happened to come across it. So my fiance, Sydney, she's Jewish. And this game came up on Kickstarter as Spinagogo, which is the Spinagogue, yeah, which is the first ever dreidel spinning stadium. This is a, I think it's a pentagram size stadium. It might be a hex. In my head, it looks like a pentagram. And you spin your dreidels inside the stadium that are bouncing around, and you're doing basically dreidel war inside of a stadium.
So wait, you were saying the shape of the stadium was either a hex or a... Oh, but isn't it just the Star of David?
Maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
I'm not six points. Yeah, I'm not a good Jewish fiance yet. So we're getting there. But I figured I'd pick this up because you gotta own it. Yeah. So there's still time to get it. So it's called Spinagogue. Spinagogue. If you know anyone Jewish, this is the makes a great Hanukkah present.
I might do that.
So give it a shot. Finally, our game of the day, which we're going to turn over to Kitty because I know Kitty. Well, Kitty and Josh played a game.
We did.
We actually played two games.
Yes. Yeah,
at Chris's behest.
Yeah. We'll talk about the first one.
I was held hostage.
On topic. But off topic, it's still kind of on topic, but I want to kind of get your guys' feel for this because it's the first time you guys have played Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what did you think? Because they wouldn't tell me off.
I enjoyed it. I mean, I think I don't know whether a large portion of my enjoyment was the fact that I won, though, because I really like winning. So I don't know. It's hard to tell.
It's hard for me to talk about my likes and dislikes without completely just going on topic. I liked it, but it's never going to be my game. I'm never going to start collecting the cards. I'm never going to do it.
Oh, yeah. I would agree with that statement. But it was fun. But yeah, it was okay.
All right. Well, let's go on topic then, and we can talk about it more there. So
sure.
Actually, we're gonna do something real quick.
Technical difficulties.
So yeah. Well, I was getting a little bit of feedback, so I unplugged this and then I did the thing, and now I can press this button.
In this episode, we're talking about collectible card games, Yu-Gi-Oh!, Magic the Gathering, and Pokemon. What do they have in common? How would you get into one? And what do we like or not like about them? Let's find out.
Yeah, so let's first start with Yu-Gi-Oh! So I took the top three collectible card games, which happen to be Yu-Gi-Oh!, Pokemon, and Magic.
In terms of popularity, right?
In terms of popularity, sales, however they measure this type of thing.
Yeah.
Yu-Gi-Oh! I believe actually beats Pokemon.
In terms of like how many people buy it and play
in terms of how many people buy it. And I'm assuming this is mostly European because I don't think it's as big in the US.
Do you really think Yu-Gi-Oh! Beats it?
I don't know.
I need to look this up.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound right to me.
I would say Magic is certainly the most popular by far.
Okay.
And probably the most complex of the games. Pokemon is not the same designer, but the same company, essentially. This is still published by Wizards of the Coast. Yu-Gi-Oh! Is the worst game I have ever played, ever.
Yeah, you led with that when you said, let me explain to you how this works.
It is terrible.
It really is.
I'm pretty easygoing on games.
Yeah.
I do not understand how anyone wants to play this game.
Because it's got Yu-Gi-Oh! Written all over it.
Maybe. Probably. Maybe. I don't know. Free box of crackers with every purchase. I just don't understand. To give you a quick, do you have information for us, Kitty?
Not yet.
Okay. Give you a quick rundown of what Yu-Gi-Oh! Is, because I just want to get this out of the way.
Yeah.
The cards are horrible. The graphic design is horrible. The pictures on the cards are fine if you like the Yu-Gi-Oh! Artwork. The text is tiny. The gameplay, I've not played past three turns.
And we should probably mention just before we start, for anyone who doesn't know, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is based off like a kind of a Japanese anime cartoon that is very popular.
Right? Yeah. So Sydney and I played this first, and our game lasted for, I think it was three turns.
Right.
And then we tried it again, and it lasted for two turns.
Right.
And we're like, we got to be doing something wrong.
Right.
Just because of the way the mechanics work. So you can bring out a monster, you can attack the other person, you can either kill the other person or not kill the other person, the damage overflows, etc. So we're like, we got to be doing something wrong. So we're like, let's look at somebody play it online. So we went to the European National Championships and started looking at those online. Over 1,000 people participated in this tournament. We watched the first match of, like, the first featured match. The first game was over in two turns. Each player took a turn, actually three turns. Each player took a turn. On the first player's second turn, the game was over. On the second game, it was over on the first turn.
That's crazy.
It is a completely pointless activity. It's completely random. There's nothing to it. Kitty, tell me about it.
I didn't think it was as awful as you say it is. I didn't. It's, once again, it's not going to be my favorite new thing. But I mean, like, there was a bit of strategy to, like, I'm imagining if I was putting my deck together, because I did not. I played with the pre-made. Yeah, we played
decks.
Yeah. But, you know, like, you, because if, what happened to Josh was he couldn't get any of his monsters out, and I just destroyed him. Yeah. And that seems to be what it is. And, like, you have to really find a balance between, like, having, like, enough low-level monsters. You have to be able to get stuff out fast enough. But also, like, you know, the spells are really good. I had a spell that I just drew some really good cards. Maybe that's my thing, is, like, Josh won Magic. I won Yu-Gi-Oh! And so now I'm like, well, it's not the worst.
Yeah, Josh, what did you think about your game?
I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I think it absolutely sucks. Like, it's terrible. And it's not, I honestly don't think it's because I lost. You know, like, if the game is able to very quickly and easily end in three turns without you being able to do anything, regardless of whether you made the deck or not, I think there's something wrong with the game.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
I don't know. It gives it a lot of replayability. Like, you can sit down and play a bunch of games in a row and probably have very different outcomes
we
each time.
We can also just roll dice and whoever rolls highest wins. It's the same strategy.
Yahtzee is a game.
We can play Yahtzee and see who. I'm fine with playing Yahtzee. I'll play Yahtzee any day over Yu-Gi-Oh! So that's all we're going to put towards Yu-Gi-Oh!
I agree.
It is, in fact, more popular than Pokemon.
Yeah, oh, so I thought some Magic he Yu-Gi-Oh! Right. Pokemon.
Wow, crazy.
So, first of all, a couple things. Collectible card games, also known as trading card games, they're kind of interchangeable. There's no real distinction between one or the other. It's either CCG or TCG. It's the same. Every once in a while you hear about an LCG, which is a living card game, which is a trademark of Fantasy Flight, which really is a non-collectible. You get a base set of cards and you buy expansions to those cards, but they're not random. So we won't be talking about LCGs here, maybe in another show. But all these games, though, tend to have the slot machine feel to it. You buy a booster pack, there's a random, or there's a rare, there's some uncommons, there's multiple commons. Nowadays, there's like ultra rares and foils, and you just want to keep buying them to see what card you pull.
Which is exactly why I will never get into them.
Yes.
But I mean, as a kid, like, I understand that feeling, because, you know, there was, like, you know, soccer player cards, stickers that we used to collect and trade on the playground. And I imagine it's that feeling. You know,
it is.
It's just totally like, oh my God, I got this card. It's so rare.
Yeah. Oh. And that's exactly what it is. And that's what the appeal of it is.
I think my problem is that I'm a hoarder. And that I would never trade or get rid of anything. That, like, I just wanted to have, I got to catch them all. And, like, I don't know.
To collect them all would be, like, you know, people say thousands of dollars. And that's true. There are cheaper ways to do it. If you really want to put in the time to do the trading and all that kind of stuff, you can do it relatively cheaply. But, like, getting into Magic right now, we were just talking, this is Magic's 25th year. Like, you couldn't possibly collect all those cards.
Right.
So Magic's formats encourage you to only care about the current and previous blocks. And there's three sets in a year, which create a block. And there's two blocks are the current tournament factor. But you can still have the old cards. There's other formats that play that too. So
depends if you're doing tournaments, what style you're playing in.
Yep. Now, I am not familiar with how Pokemon does their releases. I think it's very similar, though, where they release a set and then you have expansions that come after it. Because every time I go into Target and I look in the trading card section, there are 150 different colors of Pokemon I could potentially get.
Yeah.
I should have done more research. But I would imagine they would be like the different worlds, like the games are, where it's like XY, Soul Silver.
Yep.
And also, I think there's an elemental piece to it because, you know, Chris got me a couple of packs around Christmas, and one of them was like an electric deck, and the other one was like a psychic deck. So sometimes it's based on the elements.
Starter decks.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. So the starter decks are like that, but booster packs are from the different
colors.
Yeah.
Well, they're from the different
generations.
Yeah.
Generations.
So like, was it Diamond and Sapphire, Gold and Silver?
Right.
So those generations, each generation has their own things, and then you have smaller sets within them. Right now, they're rebooting the original series. Mm. So there's a whole new set of cards, which are basically all of the original Pokemon, but updated for modern play styles and stuff.
Yeah.
So, and this
keep that gravy train going.
Exactly. So they're
get those bucks in.
Yeah, they're basically printing money on this cardboard. And it works.
Right, just like Magic is, right? Yep. I mean, it's a game, obviously, and it's, you know, very taken very seriously by a lot of people. But it's, you know, it's a great way to make money at the same time.
So I really enjoy... So Pokemon, if you haven't played, the way that the Pokemon works is you have one Pokemon that's fighting your opponent's Pokemon. And then you have a bench. And you have, I believe, six Pokemon on your bench. Yeah. And at any given point, you can retreat your Pokemon to put another Pokemon on the bench. It costs you energy to do this, and your Pokemon has to be powered up with energy to use their special moves. Mm-hmm. You're attempting to basically KO six of your opponent's Pokemon. Some of them can count for more, but there's a prize pool. You have six prizes, and you get a prize anytime you knock out one of your opponent's Pokemon. And a prize is just a card you can put into your hand, so it's an extra draw you get. And that's essentially Pokemon. Now, this has a pretty deep strategy to it. I do enjoy this game. There are shortcomings to it as well. I think the resistances and the elemental like strengths and weaknesses can really offset one deck versus another. We had that issue when we were playing the starter decks.
We did.
Yeah.
You know, the one deck was just weak to the other. And there was really no way of, you know, combating that.
Balancing it, yeah.
Right. But there's trainer cards that you can play outside of the Pokemon cards. You can evolve your Pokemon. You can have multiple levels of that. It really, if you like Pokemon, it captures that feel really well.
Definitely.
It feels I used to play a lot of Pokemon. I haven't played in years, though, mostly because I built an amazing deck and no one would play with me anymore.
That's usually how that happens,
And I never got to the next, because I feel like there's two levels. You get to that point, you've got your amazing deck, and no one will play with you anymore that you know. And either you, you know, can go find other people to play with you and move to the next level, or you just go, well, that sucks. And that's what I did. Yep. Just stop playing.
Right.
But it does, it feels a lot like the video game. The Game Boy game and the Pokemon card game, it really feels like you're using the same moves, you're using the same things. It really captures the game very well. Yeah.
And because of that, it captures the imagination of kids really, really well. We were talking about Sylvia. Sylvia's 11. And, you know, she's been playing this for almost 4 years now, you know. And at first she had the cards because they looked cool. Yeah. But now she knows how they play and what you can do and how to build decks.
She taught me how to play.
Yeah. You know, I run Dungeons & Dragons at a game store in Chicago, Cat & Mouse Games, and one of the kids that plays there is Parker. And he is actually in the top 20 of, like the little or young league, whatever that is, you know. And he's looking for going, like, to, you know, junior nationals for Pokemon.
That's so cool.
You know, so it's these kind of things where they really, you build up strategy, you build up skills with, like, playing against other people. It's really kind of it brings people together. And I think Pokemon does it in a little bit more relaxed way, especially when you're at the junior level.
Yeah.
Well, also the game itself is much simpler than if you compare it to Magic, you know, the mechanics and the amount of rules there are on the cards. You know, it seems like it plays much more beginner friendly, which is great.
I don't know. I think that we might all just be conditioned to understand how Pokemon is supposed to work based on watching the show and playing the video game.
Well, part of it, because, like, the resistances
really all interconnect very well. Yeah. It's everywhere.
Yeah, because when I'm playing Pokemon, the resistances and vulnerabilities are just little icons at the bottom of a card, and I miss it every single time. In fact, most of the times when I'm teaching it, I just, like, these don't exist.
Right.
And if you just cut those out, it balances the decks a little bit more.
Sure.
But if you know the resistances and stuff because you watch the cartoon and just know the Pokemon, you don't even need the bottom of the card. You just know what it is.
Pikachu can't beat Brock's gym.
Exactly.
That you have to go get a water Pokemon.
Right. That's true. There's definitely an element of that. I think I've seen a few, now that I've played one round of Magic, I feel like I've seen a few, like, chaining combinations that I don't think would exist as much in the Pokemon game.
Yep.
Having played it as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
So maybe that's the kind of complex bit that I'm thinking, but you're right. There is a certain inherent knowledge because we all know Pokemon. And I think that that's a real strength, again, is the fact is just it's such a strong theme, such a popular theme mm-hmm. that you have that nostalgia. I'm like, oh my God, I've got Blastoise in my hand. This is going to be amazing.
Yeah. And if it's a foil Blastoise, wow. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I will admit, if you are hoping for really in-depth strategy talk from us, hopefully you'd know that we never do that. Yeah. Also, we're going to talk about three very popular trading card games in 30 minutes. And, well, Yu-Gi-Oh! Took five. So we will get to Magic. Actually, maybe right now. You guys have anything else to add to Pokemon before we go to Magic? And then we can So Magic, I got into Magic back in 1992 when this thing first came out. It was 92 or 93. I don't know if we're officially in 25 years. I haven't seen any anniversary things. Mm. We were going to have a guest on today's show talk about Magic, but ironically, he couldn't because he was at a Magic launch event. So that's sort of like, all right. So they're still doing launch events. These things happen. Magic set up a set format. In the early, early days of Magic, it was just willy-nilly. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of playtesting in the sets, not a lot of regularity when they came out or the size of the sets. When Hasbro bought Wizard of the Coast, they're like, okay, you got a great thing here with Magic, but you need to regulate it. So now every year there's a big expansion and two small expansions.
A very high risk of becoming a fad of just like, oh, everyone did it and now it's dead. But
you have all these mega power cards and if you don't have those, you really can't get into this game at all. So Hasbro said, no, you guys need to put this in a system where new players can actually come in because you can't just work on old players. They're going to run out of money.
Because in 1992... I was six, and I was not into Magic the Gathering as a six-year-old, and I would, you know, maybe be interested in getting into it, and there's no way you can build on that. Yep. Like, you know, if I got into it when I was 15, I had 9 years of making up to do.
Yep. Well, so today, and Magic is probably, you go from Pokemon, and then you go to Magic, or you don't go anywhere. You go from Pokemon and just stop playing collectible card games, but Magic has a lot more depth. Now, both Pokemon and Magic do have one major flaw in their game design, but it's worked around in a lot of different ways, and that's the energy slash land problem. Well,
according to you, it's a problem. Maybe some people like the limitations of it, but explain it.
Well, so the way that the energy works or land works is there's a certain portion of your deck which do nothing but allow you to use the rest of your deck. So in Pokemon, it's energy, and in Magic, it's land. And if you get what we call basically mana screwed at the beginning of a Magic game where you have one mana and you just can't draw anything more, you're just going to sit there and watch your opponent stomp all over you. Now, Magic is always played in best of three, well, in tournament formats anyway, and so is Pokemon for that matter. But it can, that balance is tricky. However, there's a ton of ways to counteract that. You want to design your deck so you have a lot of low-cost things. The Mulligan rules improve that quite a bit. There are other things that give you mana. So the game has evolved to work with that process. But it is, you know, basically, if you're building a 60-card deck, 22 to 24 of your cards are going to be land. And then the other ones are going to be actual cards that do something. So the way Magic works, if you've never played Magic, and I assume people haven't because I'm sitting with two people who played their first game today, and the rules have evolved over time, but there's essentially five things you can do. You can play one land every turn if you have one. You just play it for free. You can summon creatures, and creatures stay in play, and they're your primary way of doing damage to someone else. You can cast spells on your turn, which are called sorceries, which can only be cast on your turn. They can do direct damage. They can kill creatures outright. They can temporarily buff creatures. They can do all kinds of different things. You can cast
Draw
from your deck. You can cast enchantments, which could be targeted on a creature or targeted, you know, just in play and changes what you can do. Kitty drew one where it's like, I have an enchantment. From now on, when I draw a card, I can say I'm looking for a land and I can keep flipping until I find a land.
Or a non-land. It was either way.
I just
got to say at the beginning,
I'm
looking for this.
And then you can cast instants. And instants are spells you can cast whenever you want. Now, originally there used to be interrupts and then mana speeds and all kinds of things. There was mana burn. There was just a ton of extra rules that they just kind of phased out over time to simplify the game. But as you can see, and Josh, you had mentioned this, every card has kind of an exception to the rule, right?
Well, even just whatever a card is, like if it's a creature, you know, they often have abilities and things. So they are, each card feels like a rule. If it's not just a basic land or something, each card feels like a rule. So you really have to know your deck inside and out to be very good. But I argue that if you to be really, truly good, you kind of need to know what other cards are out there that are going to come back at you.
Yeah.
So that's, I think that was my major issue with it. I had a lot of fun playing it, but I thought to myself, wow, to really get into this, I would have to know so much about this. And well, for the right kind of person, that's enjoyable.
Yeah. That's part of the process of building your deck, though, is like, because we use starter decks, I don't think you got this. Have you ever built a deck of your own before?
No, never.
So that makes a big difference in how the game is played. Is like, when you do that, you usually buy a starter deck and then you buy a whole bunch of packs and you open them all up and you just get to sit down and read the different types of cards. You get to read all the different abilities that are out there and you get a good feel while you build your personal deck of what might be in other people's decks. The cards that you choose not to put in yours, somebody else might have in theirs.
Right.
The more you play, the more familiar you become with your deck. And it only takes one time of being like screwed by a card to be like, I remember that forever.
Yeah. Yep.
You see that card come out and you're like, ugh.
And honestly, anybody can get into Magic these days. It's very simple to do and still not being overwhelmed. Yeah. So the release event that just happened, I honestly don't know if this is a major or a minor. It's January, so I think it might be a major. The majors, if I remember correctly, have 360-ish cards in them. So you can go online and see every single card and everything it does. And there's ultra rares and rares and the uncommons and commons. You could walk into any game store and say, hey, I want to get into Magic. I just want to buy a common and uncommon playset. How much is it going to cost? And it's probably going to cost you either nothing or $10. And here's, you know, 500 cards. There'll be duplicates of them.
Yeah, but that's how they hook you in.
That's
Chris.
How they hook you. Yeah. But that's how easy it is to get into
it. Sure,
Now, there'll be two other release cycles this year that go with that same storyline. So there's stories that go with each one of these. And each one of those, I want to say, is somewhere in the 120-ish additional cards that tie into those original. So that block, if you just played with the cards in that block, which is a very common style of play,
right.
You don't really have to invest a whole lot into it, you know. And you can actually go to most game stores, Dice Dojo down the street from us. You can go in on Magic Night, which I think is, you know, basically every night of the week, and say, I want to do a draft tournament. And you'll have eight people get together, and you'll open up booster packs, and you'll pick one card, pass, pick one card, pass, pick one card, pass. And then you're only playing with the cards that came out of those packs. Right. You're drafting your deck, you play against other people, and the winner gets more packs, essentially.
Right.
So there are easy ways to enter into this that aren't drop your wallet on the collecting all.
It's possible.
Right.
It's possible. But then in my mind, you run the risk of getting, if you really like it, getting addicted and being like, I must spend hundreds and thousands of dollars.
My problem more even than the money is the time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a big time commitment.
I agree.
It is your hobby.
It's like your hobby.
That's what you're doing.
I already have too many hobbies.
But some people love it. I mean, I met Derek at one of the conventions, and he was telling me, you know, he spends like thousands every year. I think he was factoring in, you know, to buy into the tournaments and the hotel rooms and everything.
Yeah.
As well as the cards, because he would buy everything.
Yeah.
But he was talking even tens of thousands of dollars. And it was shocking to me that someone would go that far. But he, you know, that, like you say, that was his hobby. That was the thing he did
so
for fun.
So when Dice Masters came out, one of Kitty's favorite games, he says ironically, or, well, facetiously, I wanted to say, okay, this is a game that I really like. It's coming out and I want to collect everything for it. And because I'm in on the ground floor, I can do it.
Right.
And for the first six or seven sets, I was able to.
Mm-hmm.
But then it got hard to find. Right. And then I got behind a set or two. And then it's just like, and then they came out with the whole ultra rare cards. And I'm just like, all right, I'm done. Like, I just, it's too hard to do.
Sure.
And Magic's kind of the same way. Mm-hmm. I want to have everything before I build any deck, which you don't need to do. You can just look at the cards.
Uh-huh.
So it's,
I think it would be a good, fun game for me. I would enjoy playing it if I played with other casual people that were at the similar level as me.
Yeah.
Like, because playing Kitty was fun because we were both similarly attuned to the game and the rules, and so we felt like we both had a chance there.
Yeah.
Although after playing it, I immediately want to go through and make my own deck.
Yeah.
Right. I have a problem.
So
if but I can't.
If Rob were on, I'd ask him about a particular format that he really likes. Right. And there's I'm going to get this wrong, so I apologize. There's either, I think it's called the General or maybe like the Rainbow General. There's two different versions. It's 100 card decks, but mm-hmm. every single card has to be different.
Right.
And you have one card, which is your general, that you can put out and you can summon whenever you need to. That can still die. Then you have to draw them. There's some mechanic to it. Mm-hmm. And the rainbow one is you have to have all five colors in it. I don't know if they're exclusive. I think you can have just like a red-green general deck and you can do that. But this particular format where you just have one of every card, and because there's 100 cards, you can't tweak your deck to the point where it's just like super lean. Because if you remember, I said 24 cards are land, 36 cards are others. You want to be able to have a very predictable deck. So really what you do is you put 9 cards in the deck and 4 of each copy. So that's your entire deck is 9 cards essentially. There's some variations to it, obviously. But when you have 100 cards and they're all different, that play becomes something that's unique every single time. You know, so those kind of, there's a lot of rules variants on Magic, so you can build these decks that are competitive, but they don't require like huge investments.
But the problem I had playing with the starter deck was we just had one type. Usually the way you have them with when you build your own is you have a couple different types of cards. You got a couple different colors.
Yeah, because Katie played green, Josh played black.
I had no flying thing, so I couldn't defend against most of Josh's, which were a lot of flying things.
Right.
And I had one guy that could defend, and then Josh killed it immediately because he had more monsters out than I did. I couldn't do anything about it.
My deck was very heavy on the attacking, and yours didn't have much to counter it. I agree.
I also was very land heavy at the beginning, and you were not, but you had enough to get your stuff out.
Yes.
You were not starved. Yeah. You were just, I just had a ton. I had like 12 land out.
Well, and you guys played one game of what would be a 3 match, because you got your planes, Josh got your planeswalker out pretty quick too, and Kitty never actually drew her planeswalker. So that helps as well when you're drawing an extra card every turn, you're powering it up, you can kill creatures.
At the end, I was still only drawing one card and Josh was drawing 3. And that went from like as soon as he started drawing 2 cards, he got out his planeswalker, started drawing 3 every turn.
How were you drawing 3 cards?
Because I had another one that had some extra. There was 2 monsters that could draw extra cards,
Nice.
So once that started, like it just, he was getting stuff out so much faster than me at that point that I had no hope of coming back from that.
But yeah, like you say, if we tweaked the decks, that would have been different. And we had that problem, Chris, when we were playing Codex. I feel we did, because we started with the sort of tutorial game, another card game. And I'm wondering, does that not fit that Codex game? Does that not fit this collectible card game?
No, because there's nothing to collect.
Oh, I see.
It's a set. Here are the cards.
Okay.
And everyone has the same cards.
So does it fall under living card game or not even that?
So living card game is it's a trademark, but it would probably be more, it's not even a living card game because they don't do expansions.
Okay, so there's no new cards coming out every so often.
Yeah, it's a block. Right. Here's a block of cards. And you can play with them in lots of different ways. You can create all kinds of different decks from them, but we're not going to be releasing a whole bunch of more cards to milk you for more money. And actually, that's a good segue. I did want to mention, these are not deck building games. Magic, Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, these are not deck building games.
Right.
You build decks to play the game. You don't play the game to build a deck. That's kind of the best way I can describe it.
Right.
So building the deck is a meta game. It's outside of the actual play of the game. It's one of the most fun parts of the game, but it's not part of what you're doing when you're playing the game. So that's where I kind of put that distinction. And like a living card game, it's basically the difference between a living card game or that style of game is, yes, you're getting more cards over time, but they're not randomized. Every card has the same rarity. So you just buy a block of cards, those are the cards that go in there. You're not chasing that rare card.
Right.
So that's a big difference between a collectible card game and a living or basically a series card game where you get card packs.
Mm-hmm. But those sort of three categories or genres, they can often play or feel like they play fairly similarly, right?
I would say that deck building and living card games can be very, very close to each other.
Right.
Because oftentimes a living card game where you're just getting more cards to be put part of your game are in some way either a deck building game or a dual game such as Magic or Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're getting foil packs, little packs of 15 cards, and there's a rare card in there, you are now talking about a trading card game or a collectible game. If you don't have that randomness, that slot machine mechanic to it, then you're talking more of a living card game or a serial card game.
So, okay, so you do think they play differently enough?
They don't have to. They can.
They can. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
So one of the games I really like is the Star Wars living card game, which is probably the least one of the least rated Star Wars or living card games.
Right.
But I like it because when you build your deck there, you pick five like missions, and actually 10 missions, and then each mission comes with five more cards. So the missions go into a mission deck, and then the other five cards go to make up the rest of your deck. So you only pick 10 things, and your deck is made, as opposed to having to pick 50 unique cards.
See, I think I could get into that more, because again, going back to my previous thing about thinking, wow, there's lots of cards here, and they all say different things, I think that's the one thing that holds me back in this genre, and I probably skew towards Spencer's kind of interests and preferences in board gaming, and that I like games with less rules.
Yep.
And I feel like these games have each card is its own rule.
Yep.
And that's tough for me. I'm like, wow, there's like so many different things I have to keep in mind for this.
Yep.
Whereas I'm a big optimizer, so I really like that. I could get very heavily into this. I know that I could. I just don't have the time. And I also don't have a lot of people I think I could play with, to be honest.
Well, Rob would play with you.
Rob would play with me, but I don't, like, you know, they're in Evanston, you know, like, it's not like, you know, you and me where we can walk 20 feet and hang out. It's not, you know, like, I see my sister Eve all the time, you know. It's a little bit harder for me to find.
It feels like, it feels like there is that a bit of a barrier there to, you know, just being able to be like, hey, play this game with me to someone that doesn't know.
Yeah. Well, and I'll say one more thing. When you're playing head-to-head duels, which are what a lot of these games are, you have to be comfortable with losing repeatedly so that you can learn how to get better.
Right.
So, yes, I do think that's true. So what I had the problem with was, I was playing against somebody who was either a lot more advanced than I was, who knew a lot more, or who had a lot more time to do research and to strategize. So if you are playing someone who has like the same commitment level as you, it stays really fun. You're both on the same level. But when it's just like, by the time I've built my new deck or dice pool or whatever, like the other person had gone through three iterations of testing theirs and doing research and everything, like they've already gotten three steps better than me. It wasn't fun anymore because it was just like, oh, like how are they going to kill me this time? Like I've done my strategizing, but if you had so much more time to do it, it stopped being fun.
Yep. So we're at time. Tell us what you guys think about collectible card games. Did we get it completely wrong? You know, obviously this is a very high level. What do you think? What's the best way to get into them? What are your favorites? I know there are a ton of other collectible card games that, you know, come and go. I think the three we talked about are the ones that stick around, although I still don't understand why Yu-Gi-Oh! Is around at all. But
I forgot to throw out my Digimon shout out.
Digimon, there's
my brother was a big
Digimon,
fan.
Digital Monsters.
There was actually a World of Warcraft trading card game at some point. A Star Trek one. There was a Babylon 5. You name it. If there's a license for it, there was probably a collectible trading card game for it at one point.
Right.
So most of those have all fallen to the wayside. But yeah, let us know what you think about Magic, Pokemon. And if you can defend Yu-Gi-Oh!, I would love to hear.
Yeah,
I would love to hear
really
someone
chime in about that.
Tell me why.
Did we look into Yu-Gi-Oh! 5Ds at all?
We did not look into Yu-Gi-Oh! 5Ds.
I just saw it pop up on this thing that I was researching.
Maybe that There's some changes.
I don't know.
It seems like it says it makes no sense to people who play the original Yu-Gi-Oh! So maybe we would like it.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, send us your thoughts. Don't forget, we have a contest. Email us, Valentine's Day contest, tabletopgametalk.com. Tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Josh is going to remind you in just a second anyway. So thank you for listening. And that is not the right button.
Difficulties.
Full of them
tonight. I'm going to press a different button and Josh is going to take us
out. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review or email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. You can also reach us directly on Twitter at tabletopgametlk. And I'm at Josh's Blonde. Chris is at Game Master Chris and Kitty is at Kitten L. And if you like what you hear, help us spread the word by liking us on Facebook and Twitter, or even better, sharing or retweeting our posts. Until next week, when we talk about expansions, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.